Hello everyone, welcome to the first ever conversational episode of the Conscious Nigeria podcast. These episodes will be a deviation from our normal educational style delivery to one in which we have a discussion with a panel of various Nigerians. We will cover issues on a wide range of subjects, from politics to sports, religion, relationships, technology, and so on. Today I have with me five people who will be talking to us. They will introduce themselves in a minute, but before that, I would like to tell you who I am. My name is Nathan. I am a software developer and a conscious Nigerian. So let's get right on into it. We'll start first with Dan. Dan, can you please tell us who you are?
Oh, thank you, Nathan. My name is Daniel and I am a solar engineer.
Yeah, thanks, Daniel, for the introduction. Next person is Cecilia. Cecilia, could you please tell us who you are?
Hi, my name is Cecilia Oluwadunsi, and I am a PhD researcher in the field of polymer chemistry.
Thanks, Cecilia. If you listen to the first episode, you already know Cecilia as one of our podcast presenters. Next person on the panel is Kingsley. Kingsley, please, could you tell us who you are?
Hello, everyone. My name is Kingsley, as you already know, and I'm a PhD researcher, and I'm passionate about Africa, and I really want to be involved with activities that brings about sustainable development in Africa, and that enlightens the people from this part of the world. So, that's all I can say about me.
Thank you, Kingsley, for your insightful introduction. Next person on the panel is Kiki. Kiki, could you please tell us who you are?
Hello, everyone. My name is Okikiola Olajide. I'm also a PhD researcher, but in the field of virology. I'm a conscious Nigerian.
Awesome stuff. We also have Uthman with us. Uthman, could you please introduce yourself?
Yeah, thank you. My name is Uthman Oyebanji, and I study and research about renewable energy systems.
Great, great. So we have a panel made up of lots of academics, but today we are not going to be talking about academics. We are going to be doing more of, politics. We're going to be talking about the End SARS movement, which has been the most important thing in the Nigerian sphere this past 2 to 3 weeks. Yeah, youths decided to speak up against violence and injustice by some rogue police officers. It started out as a conversation on Twitter, and it grew until it became a movement and went further into nationwide protests, where we saw people out in the streets of major cities around the country calling for an end to police brutality and the loss of lives that arise as a result of police brutality. So today we are going to lend our voice to this call to end SARS and also try to analyze the movement, its formation, how it was organized and carried out, and finally we'll look at the results from it. So first, let's talk about the movement. What do you think about it? I know some people on Twitter are all for the movement. They are like, yes, the youth are out standing up for their rights, they should go ahead. Some other people are like, just a section of SARS is corrupt, so there should be a reform, not a total scrapping of the unit. So I would like to ask our panel what they think. I'll start from Daniel. So Daniel, can you tell us, what does this movement mean to you? What do you think of it so far?
Thank you, Nathan. I see the End SARS movement as a point in the history of Nigeria where the people stand up to say no to an injustice that is done to them. We've had similar instances going up in Nigeria, but up till now, we've not really had people to come out to protest against this injustice that is done to the people, because I felt it has never gotten to a threshold. But with this protest against the SARS, I think Nigerians have been pushed to the wall where they have nowhere to go again rather than to bounce back and say no to what is done to them. And like for this NSAS protest, for me, I think it's the beginning of this rallying call for Nigerians to come together to like speak against all forms of injustice in the society, starting from this NSAS movement. And the success of this protest is really going to tell what will happen afterward, as we have other social injustice, economic injustice in Nigeria coming up, how people will react to it and go on the street to say no to what they deem unfair.
Okay, thanks, Dan. You mentioned this is the first time Nigerians have been pushed to the wall. But if you check our history, I think there are other times Nigerians have come out to protest en masse. So, Uthman, can you tell us what do you think makes this NSAS protest different from all the other times Nigerians have come out to protest against one form of injustice or the other?
Yeah, thank you. But for me, I think we've always protested. It's just that the difference now is we are under democratic rule and the influence of internet. So I see a lot of people, I didn't really join people in, or I don't like to do that. Some people try to compare our generation to the earlier generation, but we should not forget that the earlier generation, they also, if you remember, okay, if you hear the story of 1993, I think it was more, it was tougher, it was stronger than this. But there is, it's easy to kill that kind of protest to gain ground, because some set of people is protesting in Lagos, another one in Port Harcourt. Without internet, there won't be coordination. But in this NSAS, internet is a major factor, the social media. So whatever is happening at one end is really getting to other ends. So I think that's a major plus. The social media is a major plus to this. But to say we've not been protesting, I think we've been. And even on this scale, it's just that there was no social media then, and it was under military rule. It's even tougher to protest under a military rule, and they suffered military rule almost entirely, all through their whatever then, back then. But this time, we have social media to help us.
Yes, there have been protests in Nigeria, but these protests have been seen as sectional protests. Even the annulment of June 12 election in Nigeria was largely in the southern part of Nigeria. When the Islamic guys were protesting, we're like, okay, it was just the Shiite. When the IPOB guys are protesting, we say it's just the IPOB. But like, this is the first time in Nigeria that we have this kind of protest. Like, we all agree to, like, yes, SARS is bad, and everyone is coming up against that. Even the government is equally admitting that SARS is bad, regardless of what they are doing. So my stance on, like, this is the first time we're having on this kind of protest is the fact that it is the only cause that got all Nigerians on board, and not just, like, one part protesting and the other part saying, oh, this is just their business.
Okay, Dan, I get your point now. So, Cecilia, what do you think about the entire protest, and what's your take on it so far?
I mean, I agree with everything that both Daniel and Uthman have said, although it's kind of like, although it got contradicting at some point. But I would just like to add that I think it was the, I don't know if I can use the word first time in a long time that our leaders, that we have been able to prove to our leaders that we are actually not afraid, or we're not scared of, you know, going to the point of almost losing our lives to prove a point. So everyone is standing together and holding their hands together on this particular matter, and everyone is like, we are so done with this, we are ready to do anything for this. And I think this is what a lot of our leaders just take for granted, because they see us, I guess, and this generation as, you know, selfish and you just doing things for your own interest. But then this time people are like just coming together to say, no, we don't want this, and we're going to do anything to make sure that this is taken care of, you know. So I think that's one amazing point that that came out of all of the protests.
Yeah. So I agree with Daniel also. I think that the protests, this NSAS protests, is like a pivotal point, like the tipping point, you know, when you've pushed someone to the wall and they are forced to turn and face you. And it's that point in Nigerian history, I would say, where you have everybody coming together to fight a common enemy, you know, like you have the celebrities, you have the normal people on the streets, you have it involves both the rich, the poor, and every typical Nigerian coming together and fighting for the same cause. So it's like a uniting factor, you know. Nobody cares if you're a Christian, you're a Muslim, you're a Hausa, you're Yoruba, you're this. It was the tipping point where we could overcome all the factors that have segregated us before. And now this common enemy have finally pushed us to the point where we have a common voice and we fight it back as one. Yeah, this is for me how I see the ENSAS movement.
Great. Thanks, Kiki. Also, I want to talk about something. We all said that this was united. There were no dissenting voices, that the East, West, South, everybody came together to speak up against SARS. But if you look at it critically, I don't think that that's what happened. We saw in some parts of the country where there were pro-SARS movements. We saw some people who spoke up and said, no, we want SARS not to be disbanded. We want a reform. Even the Northern Governors Forum said what they want is a reformation of the SARS unit. So I wouldn't agree totally that this was a united protest. Even if you look at the Occupy Nigerian protest, that was also similar, the one that was during the Goodluck's administration. We had people from all over the country coming out to protest against, then I think it was the hike in price of fuel. So, yeah, I wouldn't say this protest was united, because if you stay in an echo chamber of your friends or people who share the same ideologies with you, it seems that everyone is for the ENSAS movement and everyone supported the protest. But if you look out there, I'm pretty sure there are lots of other people who have dissenting opinions. Yeah, that's just what I wanted to say.
But I would like to ask a question. I would like to tell you something just concerning what you just said now. United, it's like the wholesome meaning cannot be achieved in any situation, because when you say even like if you want the whole country to have this one voice, it's not possible. There's always going to be like 1%, 2% dissenting voices, you know. So I think the people who are on Twitter and all the social media talking about, okay, being pro-SARS or maybe going against the narrative, there are just a few percentage. So it depends on what your yardstick for counting united and what your yardstick for gauging what united can be. But I think this is also one of the most united protests Nigerian youth have ever organized.
Like, to address the question you asked, Nathan, I would like to say that some of the dissenting voices that we heard from the North concerning this ENSAS movement tend to answer this question of Nigeria trying to use one solution to fit the entire nation. I have lived in both the northern and like southern parts of Nigeria, and the operation of these SARS operatives in the north is not the same as what we have in the south. When I was in Kano, I worked there for a year and 6 months. I have never seen any SARS officer, even if they are there, I don't know. So, but if you like cross the Nigerian to the other side, there you see most of these atrocities committed by SARS operatives. So you going to tell someone from the north that SARS, it's a bad police unit, it's something they might find difficult to understand. And they might easily conclude that, yes, you have SARS disturbing people in southern Nigeria because they are criminal. We are not criminal here. That is why you don't have SARS disturbing us. So they will easily say, okay, just reform this SARS. And this NTAS movement like has two parts to it. While I think the core of it is actually a movement against bad governance, the rallying ground for the protest was NTAS because it was the cause we all agreed upon. So even like if you bring the end bad governance into this picture, then you will have these movements easily falling apart. So NTAS stays there. So when this end bad governance comes and some people see that, okay, if this bad governance ends, it's like you're talking about my uncle who is the governor, or you're talking about my tribe man, or someone that shares the same faith as me in power. So I think most of the dissenting voices we heard from the North are actually a question of this ending bad governance, and this is my government. So that's how I see this part to it. So if the question that people are talking about, if you want to end bad governance in Nigeria, it's not just about changing who is the president or the governor, it's the system as a whole. And if this system can be like overhauled in a way so that the policing problem is addressed in a way that is peculiar to a particular part of the country, I think it will be a good way forward for us.
And I think the North, I think there was one time they saw it differently or something, their own end banditry in the North or something, which still comes down to police. So to me, I feel it's the same. I don't know whether they actually went on to carry on with the protest or something, but I think it was secure the North.
That was the hashtag.
Yeah, secure the North.
Yeah. So I don't know how whether they came out also, but at the end of the day, we still have a lot of banditry in the North. We have the terrorism in the North. So it's still, as much as we try to reform the police so that they stop killing us, we need to still reform the police in the North so that terrorists or bandits will stop killing the people in the North. So I think it still comes down to police reformation or something.
I mean, I hear what Nathan is saying with regards to the pro-SARS protests or people supporting pro-SARS in the North. But like Daniel said, I grew up in the North. I was born and brought up there, and I never came across SARS all the time that I was there. And it's actually quite surprising because of the large-scale insecurity in the North. This is where you should actually expect to see more SARS activity, but it's not the case. So you can understand when these people actually don't have a good understanding of the end SARS movement. And also another thing that you need to put into consideration was that at some point of the protest, I feel like the government was looking for a way to segregate the people again. And this could have actually been what birthed this pro SARS movement. I don't know. I'm just speculating that because they were just looking for a ways to discredit what people were standing up for. And of course, the perfect people are the people who don't actually have an understanding of SARS and how they operate. So it just had to be one person just had to push that story out, all pro SARS, and then other people had to pick it up. So I don't know if I would say that the fact that there were a few number of people who were pro-SARS or other governments in the North who were claiming pro-SARS were actually representing what the people thought, but could just be a segment of the government trying to discredit what the people were trying to fight for. Because I think that there were many people in the North who felt like, who started to include their own hashtag, like hashtag secure the North, hashtag this, hashtag that. And everybody saw like the hashtag end SARS movement as the opportunity for them to speak up for what they wanted to end in Nigeria.
When you mentioned the North, that there are lots of people in the North who were for the NTAS movement. I mean, one of the most popular faces was Aisha Yesufu. She's from the North.
Aisha Yesufu is not really from the North.
She's not from the North. Edo State.
Oh,
and
my
I
bad.
Think she stays in, where does she stay? She stays in Lagos,
Abuja.
She stays in Abuja. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But so then okay, she stays in the North regardless. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
There were people who were from the North, I mean, they were protesting in Taraba. They were protesting different places. So people from the north who stood up for the fight against SARS. Mm-hmm. So we should not just blanket the statement because they were pro-SARS people all over. On the other hand, I even spoke to someone who lives in Lagos and he works in a certain ministry. He said, SARS has never harassed him because he is not a Yahoo boy. So some people have that belief that they're just against Yahoo boys.
I mean,
so
for this me, it's just sad that someone would say this after all the videos you've watched and seen how they treat other people. It's not a matter of whether you are Yahoo or you're not Yahoo.
Yeah, exactly.
But the fact that the way they treat people, I think any reasonable person should not support something like this.
Well, maybe the person has not even seen the video. Because
I mean, you don't even really need to see the videos. Yeah. It's, I mean, the number of SARS elects, I'm from Ekiti State, and in Ekiti alone, the way SARS operate, you know, you already know where they are and you know where their points are. And you just have to be in a car that looks slightly good and they stop you. You don't even have to. So if you're in a car that looks slightly good and you're a bit young and you're not dressed in like Agbada or something and you're like just, you know, you're well dressed and you don't look married. I don't even know what look married is, but you don't look married and you look like you're doing well for yourself. They really stop you. And it's not even like the state is not that huge and Ado Ekiti is really not a big city. But the number of stop points they have in that city alone, it's amazing. You can almost not go out on a day and not meet them on the road. And it's just harassment the whole day.
And the most annoying thing, thing is that slap that they always... That slap is just to face disorganize every single SARS case that they took. They say, before you even say anything, and I know that is arm robbery tactic, because when you face arm robber, the first thing is they slap you so that the next thing they are going to ask you, where is your money? You just say, you won't be able to lie. So, which means, when I hear all these cases and I see similar trends, I feel like, oh, these people are just like arm robber, because they just slap you for no reason, and it's always
to disorient you.
Just to disorient you, so that the next question, where is your ATM? You won't even think of lying. You see gone, and you've already been slapped. You just say, okay, yes, this is how much I have in my ATM. So
we've talked a while. Some of us mentioned already social media. I would like us to talk about the role social media played in making this protest feasible, how it drove the conversation, first from our screens and then to people talking about it one-on-one to themselves and then down to the streets. So I would like us to just speak about this. So Kingsley, what do you have to say about this?
Yeah, that just goes to show you that we are actually experiencing a new paradigm shift. And this is like the youth's influence. You know, most like the youths are more pop, they're more in the social media space. And this is what takes them. This is what occupies them. So if you want to engage the youth, engage them in social media. And now you can see that we have a lockdown and we also have a lot of youths who are out of school because of the whole strike issues. And so a lot of youths have been using their social media. So the to start a protest with social media was quite a very strategic point in this protest. And it's actually started like a small drops, like little drops of water, and you could see people, like more celebrities weighed in on it, and it gave it more meaning, more momentum. And yeah, this just goes to tell us that in the past, I don't think we could have mobilized so much youths like we did just within a short space of time like we did now. Now we have social media, we could communicate, we could tweet out ideas or meeting points. You can see like in Germany, in Freiburg, in UK, in France, in London, and many of those cities, you see a lot of people hosting synchronizing with the other cities, just trying to hold the same protest and lend their voices to the same cause. So this can only be possible with social media. Other, like in 10 to 15 years ago, we'll be waiting for the next broadcast, like a new TV station to tell us what's happening. And maybe when the broadcast comes on, things might have dizzled, like gone down in all the locations where these things are really happening. So I think social media really gives us the real-time experience, the real-time participation in the cause for activism and also the cause for developing our society. Yeah. So for me, I really think we need to go to the church and give a very big testimony for how the herald of social media.
Oh my God. Does anyone have anything else to say?
Regarding the social media, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I think when people say, the question on people's lips is actually, how come that a protest without any leader is disorganized? As in, it was really organized and had like stability, full stability. And the obvious leader of that post is actually social media. Like, it's coordinated everything properly, information. So even when it's about to get messed up at one end, there is always communication from another. I see the way it's being done. For example, I know the Lekki protest was actually like a benchmark because it's where it started and so many people were just following the steps. I know people in Ogun State, my place, I know we are not like all these protests, we are not into all these protests, but when they started sharing foods and giving people and cleaning up in Lekki, in Abeokuta, people over there in Abeokuta are also doing the same thing. In Ekiti, I see so many videos, people just, so the real leader of this protest, even when the politician tried to play the card of who is your leader, the reason why that card, because it's always like the first card they drop in any protest, who is the leader, so that they can catch the leader, either they settle the leader, they threaten the leader, they jail the leader, or they kill the leader, or whatever they want to do with the leader. So this protest, the leader of this protest is actually social media.
As a follow-up to what Othman said about these protests not having a leader, from your personal assessment, do you think it was really the best thing for these protests? Because as we know, like world over, whenever there is a war, like a war usually ends in a dialogue where people have to sit and like say, okay, this is what I want, these are my terms, these are your terms. But the protest was well coordinated, which I see as like the battleground, the war. But the part that the protests will have to move from this battlefield into an idea field. And there is where you have a leader really speaking for the protest. And where these our protests did not have a leader, did we think it was really the best thing for the protest? And let's remove the fact that the leader would have sold out the protest, or the leader would have been arrested, or the other things. Like, let's really talk about the protest not having a leader. So did we think it was the best
thing? I think it was.
Or do we think it was the best thing?
I think so, because like we all, I mean, have or agree with that this protest kind of brought people together, you know, in a unique way, right? And I think it would have been difficult to have had a leader that would not have brought about segregation, you know? And we had different people from different walks of life in Nigeria coming together against a common cause. And I think, like Othman said, it was well organized. Everything went really, really nicely. And I think, like you said, this was war, I don't know, I can't remember how you put it, and now we have to translate it into like an idea moving forward. And I think the people are already doing that, and they are trying to, I think there was a post about nominating people that yes. will represent us on different levels. And I think now they are nominating people based on actually what they have done so far in the protest. You know, if had it been there was a leader before, I mean, based on what, based on what credibility would we choose the leader? You understand? It would have been a little bit biased from whichever angle you look at it. But now I think everybody is well aware of the people that, like, the first few names you would call when you talk about this protest. I think for me, I would for sure call Aisha Yeshufu. I will call this, I will call that. And when we all look at it, I think we will all have a few common people in our list that we know played really crucial roles in this protest. And if any one of these people are nominated to represent us in any way, I think nobody would contradict to that. So for me, I think I like the way it played out, and I like the way how it's now translating to we nominating people to go for this, go for this, and go for that.
Well, I kind of do not agree. Well, I agree with Kiki at some points, but then I think we could have done this a bit earlier. So I like the way the protest did not start with the leader. So this was definitely good. But I think we got to some point around 1 week after this protest started, where we really could have taken some time off to re-strategize with the leaders that emerged. So the thing is, a couple of people came up, or a couple of people started to rise up as leading the pack during the protest, right? And I think this was the very crucial point where things started to get messed up. Like, I know, for example, like in Ekiti, this was the point where, like, talks really started to, like, you know, do their business. And so it was, I think, around 1 week into the protest, where we already had the people emerging as those who were leading the pack. This was when we really should have sat down to, like, think about our moves and think about how we want to let this continue, because we got to a point where it was like, okay, now what? You know, we've been protesting and the government is not saying anything. How long do we do this for? What is our next move? And things like that. So it's good that we're doing this now, but I think it was a bit too late. Like, we really could have done this, like, you know, like 2 weeks before, because we've had these people within the first week of the protest.
But for me, I don't think, you know, this, I don't think it came too late, because this whole thing was not, is, we didn't really plan anything. Yeah. It just came and people were still trying to settle. We just feel it's not like we are carrying out an experiment and we are timing what's going to happen. The fact is, people did not trust the government. And we can't blame the people for not trusting the government. 2017, 18, 19, 20. So fool me twice. Fool me once, then I'm not really foolish. But fool me twice, I'm the biggest fool. So, and this is like the fourth time. So for people to still remain on the streets is just, for me, I think it's understandable. For me, and at one point, just like Kiki said, it was already getting to the point. I was in one live video of Faust, and he was saying something about appointing leader, don't appoint. We know how the role Faust also played in this whole protest. And he said, don't appoint me, because some people are already saying that they should appoint me. So just they were already strategizing. But to say we should have done it earlier is something that we didn't plan, is something that we can't, it's, even a week later, it will be as if it's only when it is organized, when we organize from the beginning, from the get-go, that we can say, oh, yes, at this time, we will do this. So it was spontaneous. And for something that is that spontaneous and still well-organized like that, for me, I'm really proud of Nigerians for that.
Okay, I think I'm also proud of Nigerians for the protest. Thanks, Usman. So this leads us to the next question I have. We've talked about this protest a lot, and I would like us to answer, was this protest successful? What were the achievements? What did we gain? I know the initial plan was about ending SARS, but then at the end of the day, some people lost their lives. So can we say the protest was successful, or did we just learn lessons from it?
Could you take that?
Thank you for the question, Nathan. So, I would say yes and no. Yes, because from the protests, the things I would say, so yes and no, in the sense that was the protest successful? Yes, because I think it showed the people the power of unity, what they can achieve when they come together. And for me, honestly, as a Nigerian, this is what I have been waiting for, that point where everybody comes together and realize how much power they have together. And I think everybody could see that this protest really, really destabilized the government. They really felt threatened, so much so that they tried to pull all the stops they could to try to stop the protests. So number one, the people have already come to the consciousness of what they can achieve when they come together as one. Number two, they could see that at least they were able to move the government in some to some extent. However, way it ended, although it ended badly with the killing of people and all that, I would say this is one thing that, for me, one could say was achieved with the protest, like the possibility of what could be in the future. And also, if you'd see, if you maybe you have come across this saying that it's a relay, not a sprint, like
it's a marathon,
not a sprint. Yeah, so we may have lost this battle. I would not say completely lost this battle, but we will not lose the war ahead of us. I think we have taken a huge first step into coordinating ourselves. We realize the things we have to do. We need to be in government. I'm really happy actually this happened now and would help us in preparation for the next election to see the things we need to do and put in place. So for me, with regards to end SARS, no, it's not successful, because I think SARS are still on the road. And they have, although the government said they have been disbanded, they have not actually been. But with the end bad governance in Nigeria, I think it's a big win for us. So this is why I said yes and no.
I feel I agree with Kiki, but I don't know what we expected for the fact that Kiki said it's a success and also a little bit of failure. For me, I see it as a success. Yeah, I know we didn't really achieve what we really want to achieve, but we should know the people we are dealing with. We know, if you see the hurdles we crossed, the political card they played, the tribal card they played, the youth against youth, bringing out. You know, this protest was peaceful for more than a week until we start seeing videos of government using touts, because the touts were actually behind. The responsible youths were actually in front until they decided to use these touts to destabilize the whole thing. The whole who is your leader, the whole sounds is bad. We live through all these hurdles. It's a card that they always play in all this kind of thing. And we survived all this card. And to me, I think we are now in the big games, and the big games are not really smiling. That's why it's a marathon and not a sprint. So if we are expecting an immediate response, I don't think, if that's what we are waiting for, then we'll say this is not a success. But if we are thinking, okay, there is a switch that has been, you know, turned on in the positive direction, and that will set some actions some actions that will follow this whole thing, then in that sense, I think it's a success. Like, if you look at the bigger picture,
to be aware, Uthman, conscious
of who you
are. Yeah, Uthman. Yeah, I think this stuff you said is really great. Because you mentioned it was all going well before allegedly the government or some people introduced thugs to the mix and then caused chaos. Do you think there's a form of disconnect between youths who are educated, people who are on maybe social media, who are on Twitter, who use Twitter, for example, and the normal youth on the street? Is there a sort of disconnect?
Follow up with my
response.
I want to share my views about the successes of the NSAS movement. Like for me, the success I see in this movement is the fact that we as Nigerians have been able to like identify a cause upon which we all agree and will go out to like defend. That's the success I see here. Then as on the part of SARS, I really don't see ending SARS as a solution to the problem that we're fighting for. It's a systematic problem that even ending the police and putting me into the police force will not solve. And so this like tends to point towards our judicial system, where we have a system that is unfair. And that's why a police can brutalize you on the road and tell you that I will kill you here and nothing will happen. And he says so and nothing will happen. So when people do things like this and go scot free, then there is a tendency that they will repeat it again. We are talking about police brutality. I am from Kogi State. I think the police are not even the most brutal people there. There are thugs. There are political thugs. These guys come to your house. They kill people in broad daylight with video evidence. And you saw some of those videos during the election in Kogi State. And this thing go, and these guys are not punished. And because they are not punished, they come back to do it. So if we're talking about like ending SARS or ending police brutality, when SARS and police brutality end, then what happened between us and these thugs? So when people were protesting, these thugs were the foot soldiers that those in government, it may not necessarily be them even talking to them, but they just feel that their paymaster's office was threatened. That is why they started attacking the protesters. So for me, what I will see as a success to this process, to this whole protest, will be when this systematic change really starts to happen. And I give you like a very typical example of this justice we talk about with the shootings that happened in Lekki, Lagos. We have a country that till today nobody has come to take responsibility for what happened. And we have a National Assembly that has kept quiet. And under the Nigerian Constitution, only the president has the power to authorize Nigerian army to address civil situation like what happened in Lagos. And our force was sent there. Since constitutionally, only the president has the mandate, if the army denies it, then the National Assembly should go for the president. If the National Assembly goes for the office of the president, and even for the president authorizing such forces, it has to come from the police authority, like saying, oh, this, it wasn't even a restoration. Like, this protest is beyond our control. We need the army to intervene. Then the president can authorize the army. But none of these things happened. The National Assembly is not threatening the office of the president. The president is not threatening the office of the army chief. So we now have the governor. There was no place under our constitution that a governor can authorize an army to go against civilian. So it's just something between the office of the president and the chief of army staff, but like we just all keep quiet. And these, with time, regardless of the judicial panel of inquiry set up, this will gradually fade out, just like it happened with the Islamic movement of Nigeria, where people were killed. There was a panel of inquiry set up by Kaduna State government. The report of the committee said over 348 people were killed. Until today, nothing has happened. So because they went free with that, they can repeat this in Lagos. And if nothing is done now, this can still happen elsewhere again. There is no amount of protest like staying on the street from now till December will not bring something good out of this bad system we have. And possibly, it's like changing the system, which could happen in 2023. It's like you will not go onto the streets and start protesting and ask you to go back and write first class and I'll write first class. It's like the same thing we're demanding from the government by this protest. The present people we have running the system, I really don't see them like preferring the solutions that the youth are asking for, rather than them like going into the system to effect this change. And as you talk about for like the police, like making the police see that, okay, this protest is for them. Yeah, the ordinary police on the street knows that this protest is for them. But if you know how the ranks of the police work, The order doesn't come from that guy you talked to on the street, but the oga that is in Abuja. This oga is well paid and well fed and like lived in a very comfortable place. So he just dish out order. And the same thing goes to the army. The army that undertook the operations in Lekki Toll Gate did not do that because they believe in that cause, but because it was an order given to them and they have to execute it. So I think it's a gradual process. So like the success of saying, okay, we already agree that we have an enemy. So for me, I'm looking forward to have this translated into action when election comes in 2023. So I'm not actually expecting anything to come out of the present crop of leadership we have, because I don't see them with that capacity to deliver anything good. Even if we stay on the street from now to 2023, it's not going to change. That brain is the same. Protest will not change that brain. So it's just like remove this set of people and put people there that can actually deliver. So that's just...
Yeah, but I think that is already the success of the protest. Like the youths are awake now and they're like, we need to vote. I mean, honestly, before I was not even interested in Nigerian elections before, because like, you know, whatever, they will choose who they want to choose and then we'll all live with it. But now it's like, no, like this time we are really going to have someone there that we believe in and that we know is going to do something. So people are really looking forward to this election now, and people are starting to, I know people that are even like, there are groups now that are trying to come up with maybe new political parties. Okay, that's another discussion. Youths coming together to actually make sure that the election in 2023 is not the same kind of elections we've been having in the years before. So that is another reason why I would say this protest was very successful, because we've really achieved that out of this. Mm-hmm. And like you said, that's the most important thing that could come out of this protest anyway.
Yeah, that's very true. So is the protest ended? Are we done? What's the next step for us? And before we say that, we talked about waiting for 2023 and all of that. But there's something that's currently pertinent to our conversation and the way 2023 would play out. And that is the social media clampdown legislators are trying to do. Mm-hmm. The new or so-called social media bill. They've tried to pass it before, but there's a renewed call for it. So they're trying to push it through the house, and they're trying to find a way to censor the social media space. The youths now are all banking on using this same method used in the protests to organize for the elections. So everyone is saying, when 2023 comes, we're going to rally around on social media and maybe try to get a political party running and all of that. But if the legislators find a way to censor the social media space, what do you think would be our lot then? Do you think we're going to still be able to get the youths together? Are we going to still be able to achieve what we think we can? Because the same way we're making plans, these people are making, I mean, they've been in office for years and years. They didn't come to power today, so they have lots of strategies. They have so much money at their disposal. They also have young people in their employ who give them ideas. So how do you think we could use the lessons we've learned from this protest? How could we translate it into either, number one, if they decide to go ahead and implement a policy to block or censor the social media space, how do we fight against that? Are we going to do another protest? How do we make sure that this protest then is successful? After that, how do we ensure also that regardless of whatever they do, we still have our platform come 2023 to enable us come together and give and get the kind of leaders we want? So that's the question now.
So it's a really good question. I think these are things that we for sure need to think on. Yeah. I think for me, I see this as a war. Right? Yeah, exactly. They are plotting and we also need to plan. And I think we should really, really put into the consideration that this social media bill could be pushed as far as possible, because they have seen that it is one of our most relevant tools that we have. Mm. And I feel like we need to find a way that we communicate with each other without putting it all out there. Because they literally know all our plans, because we always put it out on Twitter, we always put it out, and we are kind of like an open book to them. While on the other hand, we don't really see all their moves. I don't know if you get my point. I really don't know how we go about this.
There's no way to stop this, even.
What?
Because there is no, I think there is, of course, there is an us and there's a them, or we and them. But then you always have some part of
us
is with them.
Yeah, that's true.
There is no stopping the information.
And of course, another thing we have to do is we also have to try to get some part of them to be part of us. Because the truth is, we cannot do it alone. But the thing is, I don't know. These are really valid questions that we really need to sit and think about.
For example, you know that's what brought... Tanya, you wanted to say something?
Yeah, but it's like as Kiki mentioned when she started talking, like, this is a war. Yeah, it's a war and it's a big one because there is an existing order that we're trying to change, mm-hmm. and it's not going to come like a tea party.
Mm.
It's something we have to take with brute force. And when people often talk, they say, oh, these people are smart. I really don't see them as being smart. I just see them, they use force to get what they want. So if on this social media bill that we're talking about, yes, this bill is going to get through the National Assembly, but even without the bill getting through the National Assembly, we're already having politicians that are oppressing people for putting out some information.
True.
And even when this bill go out there, it's like, okay, it's been institutionalized, but does our government have the capacity to police us on the internet? So that is a question we should ask.
That's another good one.
I saw a communique today from the committee set up to review the constitution, and these guys were using Gmail. Like, after the billions of naira spent on the National Assembly to upgrade their IT, these guys are still using Gmail. So even if
but you should know that they can also be there.
What's wrong with using
when
Gmail?
They want to be
no, there's nothing wrong with Gmail. I mean, Gmail has one of the best email services. There's also the G Suite. If they pay for G Suite, they could have a customized experience.
We are running a government. We are not running a social enterprise.
Yeah.
So our government still has some level of secrecy, not Gmail, where everything gets stored in the United States. Like, regardless of how secure it is, the point where I'm coming from is that we just need to have something built for ourselves.
Exactly.
So when you have these guys not even being able to run a simple system as just having an account on yourself, then it now gets to ask a question like, how smart are these people? I don't even know the kind of phone they use, but back to the topic that we're talking about now. So when this bill gets passed, we still can still use, in China, people still use internet regardless
That's
of
true.
How
That's
smart
true.
Exactly.
they
yeah.
are in China.
Mm.
When you compare this, our government, to the government that is in place in China, so if the Chinese people can still beat their government system to still use Facebook in the same China, then the government can pass their social bill, but I don't see that as hindering Nigerian youth coming together in 2020.
The truth is, it will hinder it to some points, but I think we just have to find a loophole in whatever bill they pass. Mm. And, for example, they might have, I don't know, all the networks under their control or whatever, but I think that what we have seen is that we can achieve whatever we set our minds to.
I am very proud of Nigeria.
I think we have the minds, we have the brains, we have the people that can come up with the solution we need to counter whatever they come with, honestly.
And there are many news coming. People even report this news. Many people coming outside Nigeria, diaspora, like firing on. So it's all coming to them from different angles, internally and externally. Yeah.
For me, my major worries for 2023 is still take me a little bit back to what I said earlier about us having this protest first and where we need to use ITA. So it was easy organizing this protest, but when it comes to youth coming together for maybe election in 2023 now, the problem I foresee coming, it's going to be these unity of purpose thing, like when you have different people saying different things at the same time and not being able to agree, then in the end, our house will just scatter. Mm-hmm. But these guys in power now have a way of settling their problem, regardless of how bad it goes. In the end, they have a way of finding a common ground and then they move forward. Mm-hmm. So when we move into 2023, given what happened during the in the course of this protest, we said, okay, we need a youth to go there in 2023. They could equally plant people into this youth, even if there is a political party and maybe there is a primary. And they have the way of like letting the police not go in there to like monitor what is happening, and you know how our system is, and kind of undermining this whole process of youth coming together. So for me, that's my greatest fear for 2023. Like even from having state primaries, if there is a youth party, having presidential primaries, when you come to Kogi State and like send thugs there and like thugs destroy everything, or you have these same guys planting a young guy there just to destabilize the whole system. They give him money and he still have the backings of the state force. So how do you see that playing out, and how do you see our youths, like, in spite of this, still coming together to...
I mean, I have to say, Daniel, like, so my fear, it was kind of related to what you talked about, but I think you were like at another level than I was. Mine was even more like, how many youths will actually go out to vote in 2023? So the way INEC works, as you can only get your PVC like a couple of months before election, right? Like 3 months before election. So people are going to work, people are busy with their lives, and then you're like, oh, I don't care about this anymore. You know, like, I lined up the whole day, I've not gotten it, I'm done, you know? So these are the small tactics that have been used up till now to discourage people from voting. So for me personally, I feel like if there's going to be another rally, if there's going to be another protest, it's for INEC to start registration of PVCs by the end of next year. Let them start. Let people start to get their PVCs. So this will start gingering people up, you know? And then we know where we've come from. I think Nigerian youths are not stupid. We see these things and we know when someone is being manipulated-ish in a bit, and we know when it's just sweet words and nonsense, you know? I feel like even if we end up with a political party that has been kind of corrupted and that, you know, that you, that is not fulfilling the purpose, or that is not going towards, you know, the better Nigeria that we have. If we have the numbers, so election at the end of the day is about numbers. If we have the numbers and we have enough youth that believe in this, that believe in this new Nigeria, that are going out to vote, then we would still be fine even in 2023. So The scenario we were talking about, it could also play out even without having a youth in their party. You know, if it's just the normal people that go out to vote, that would go out to vote again, people that you can easily buy their votes and that you can easily manipulate and stuff like that, then you would still have the same situation playing out again. I think what we really need, though, is people that are just tired of what we have right now, of the system we have right now, and are ready for a change, for those set of people to register for their PVCs and go out to vote in 2023.
Mm-hmm. Just for your information, just for your information, like INEC said, they open the registration first quarter of next year. So
really,
like, yeah, they already said
they've rolled out the date of election
PVC registration.
During this whole protest, that's one of the things that was okay. That's one of the moments that feel okay, this protest is at least, I don't know, I just feel it's a step in the right direction, this protest. I'm not feeling bad at all about it.
And one thing in line with what Daniel and Cecilia said is that I think they will hit us from every angle they can. They will hit us hard.
And we
just have to stand. I don't know if we are ready, but I hope we will be ready. Yeah, no, I tell you, look, see, the protests that happened, it's based on many factors. For example, corona, students at home, ASUU strike. It's a lot of factors together that made it possible for this protest to happen. I hope we will remember that, for example, during PVC registration and stuff like that, students will speak up and say, we want a pause in our university. Like, to be the students calling for a break in education. We need to go home. We need to do our PVC registration. We need to go home. We need to vote. We need to go home. Like, at each stepping point in time, we need to make certain demands and we need our voices to be heard. So we need to be alert. We need to keep moving. And I really think it's in the hands of whatever leaders that are assigned to lead us now. For example, our celebrities, people that have followers, need to keep speaking up. We don't get tired. We don't keep quiet. When we need the youth to be available is not when they should be writing exams in university. Because I tell you, this could be one other strategy. They will say that all universities start exams when the youth should be registering for their PVs or when they should be voting. But and I which students will not be...
Registering is not a short period of time. It's
yeah, so if we need to stop universities from working at that, we stop it. In this time, it will be the students saying we want a strike. You know, It's just we need to demand at each point in time what we need and we need to just get it done. We need to make sacrifices, but it will be sacrifices that are worth it. Because now, even though students don't want to be out of school, they are out of school, but to what end? Now we need to start making conscious sacrifices that we know will better our future. So we just need to stay woke up until 2023.
Stay woke.
Yeah, let me just add.
As I am now, I will be targeting my flight to go home when I need to be in Nigeria to do all the necessary. No, it's true. It's true. I will be targeting when to book my flight when I know I need to be out in Nigeria to do this, to do that. I will be there. Because as it is now, if they would even make it an e-vote, finish.
No, but they wouldn't make that. An e-vote.
Mm. I will plan how I need to book my flight.
They will make it an e-vote.
To be at home. Everybody needs to play their part.
That's true.
So, Nathan.
Yeah, Dan. So we had a really rich discussion today. We started from the NSAS protest, the movement, and then what he thought about it. We went on to talk about the lessons we learned and if it was a success or not. We afterwards talked about how the NSAS protest moved beyond just that to more of a call for good governance and how the youth championed the calls for a new Nigeria. We also talked about 2023 and how the results from these protests can help us in planning for more youth involvement in the electoral process. I think in all, we had a really great conversation today and we are able to address these issues. This is where we come to the end of the episode today. Join us in 2 weeks' time again for another episode where we pick a topic and get the panel here and just talk about it. Next week, Cecilia and Nelson begin a new series which talks about Nigeria. How did we get here? So they'll begin an episode that tells us about Nigeria's history. Before we leave, it's time to say goodbye.
Dear listeners, here is Daniel thanking you for listening to us. Goodbye.
Goodbye from me too. This is Cecilia Oluwadunsin.
Goodbye everyone from me, Kiki.
Okay, my people, till we meet next time. Nade. Goodbye.
Uthman, yours is always going to be different. Thanks, Uthman. That was Uthman. So, it's goodbye from me, Nathan. Until next time. See you.
Thank you for listening. You can follow us on our social media platforms. We are on Instagram and on Twitter at @conscious_ng. That's CONSCIOUS_ng. You can also find us on Facebook at Conscious Nigeria, and you can find us on Naira Land at @conscious_ng. Please join us next week for another exciting podcast. Bye.
You have to be consistent. You never spoke Pidgin English during the show. Why Pidgin English now?
The spirit now.
There's no hard
it.
Rule. There's no yes, rule. Now. If you want to speak Pidgin.
They just brought
Soro
it.
Soroke.
Soro.
Take
time off before
Soro
I
speak Pidgin. Soroi. Soroi.
Oh my God.
Yeah, okay, my people too. Yeah. 1, 2, 3, go action.
Goodbye, everyone, from me, Kiki. But yeah, let's just.
Okay.